Matthew chapter 7, verse 13 and 14. Let's just deal with those two verses for a little while. Enter in by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leads to destruction. And many are those who enter in by it. How narrow is the gate, and restricted is the way that leads to life. Few are those who find it. Okay? And as throughout the Bible, there is two paths, right? And we read about this in the Psalms and in the Torah. There's the choice of life or the choice of death. There's the narrow gate, there's the wide gate. It's none of this in-between stuff or this path's eventually going to lead you around to God or anything. You have to choose. Yeshua's putting down an ultimatum here. You've got to choose one of the two, okay? And like I said, we see this throughout the Bible. Let me just give you one verse, a very popular verse, Deuteronomy 30, verse 19. I call heaven and earth to witness against you today that I have set before you life and death, the blessing and the curse. Therefore, choose life that you may live, you and your descendants. Okay, so it's one way or the other. That's it, right? The gate is narrow, meaning that it's restrictive, okay? There are things that we are just not allowed to do as followers of Messiah, you know? We don't just give in to the flesh. We follow our Messiah. We love the Lord more than we love our flesh. We love the Lord more than we love our indulgences. We love him more. We have to follow him. There's no way of doing both, right? Mm-hmm. Not that all enjoyment is bad. This is not what the teaching is saying, right? The Lord wants us to enjoy our lives. And the Lord wants us to find blessing. And the rabbis teach us again and again, it's good to enjoy the food the Lord gives you, right? Or to have sexual gratification within the bounds of marriage. But it's got to be within his way of setting forth what's good and what's wrong, okay? And every week, every day, when we say the Shema, the rabbis called that section taking on the yoke of the kingdom, okay? And so when we say the Shema, we're proclaiming there's only one God. We're saying there's only one kingdom. There's only one way to do things. There's only one right and there's only one wrong. And we are submitting ourselves to his kingdom, his kingship. So when we say the Shema, it's, okay, Lord, I'm committing myself to the narrow gate. I'm committing myself to the narrow way. Even if it means I can't be going off doing this or doing that. Okay? Restricted also, the Greek here, tethlimeni, or the basic form of that, the lemma form, the dictionary form of that word in Greek, is thlevo. Often deals with persecution. So the restricting may not only be can't do this, can't do that. The restricting may also have something to do with it's restricted because there's persecution. Few are going to want to go this way because that's not what the crowd's doing. Right, the crowd's all doing this. You're going to look down upon if you're doing that. So within the meaning of this is some of that persecution as well. Hebrews 11:37. This is the great chapter of faith. Shalom. And so, talking about those that we look up to, right? The heroes of the faith. Although if you look at the lives of those in Hebrews chapter 11, they weren't all so pristine, right? But regardless, they're held up for us as great examples of faith. And what does the writer of Hebrews say about them in 11:37? They were stoned, they were sawn apart, they were tempted, They were slain with the sword. They went around in sheepskins and in goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, ill-treated. And the afflicted there is the same word as the restricted here. Okay, so there's affliction. But when we started the Sermon on the Mount back in Matthew chapter 5, remember, our blessing doesn't come from the world. Our blessing comes from the Lord. And the blessing of the Lord is so great, to have him smile on us, to have him say, well done, good and faithful servant. It's worth the giving up this and giving up that. And it's worth the stones being hurled at us and things like that. So that's what the restricted means. However, we find that really the broad gate and the broad way, we're at Matthew 7, 13, and 14. The broad gate, the broad way, what seems so good and so pleasant and so easy, ends up becoming very restricted itself. You know, it becomes a slavery, a form of slavery. I'm telling you, when your mind is in a certain habit, a habit of gratifying yourself in your imagination, or pulling you to eat when you know you shouldn't eat, or drink alcohol above and beyond what you should, or things like that, it becomes a slave. It drives you. And even if you want to get out of it, it becomes very difficult. Romans 6, 16 through 18, Paul says this. Don't you know that when you present yourselves as servants and obey someone, you are the servants of whomever you obey, whether of sin to death or of obedience to righteousness? But thanks be to God that whereas you were bondservants of sin, you became obedient from the heart to that form of teaching to which you were delivered. Being made free from sin, you became bondservants of righteousness. So right now, it may look like, hey, this is the easy way. Yeah, let me just do this, I'll do that. But it ends up controlling you, and you become a slave to sin, which Messiah sets us free from. So this narrow gate is actually, it's narrow, you know, can't do it. But it's really the way to freedom, a way to live the way God created us to live. Okay. Verse 14, few are those who find it. Few are those who find it. Why? Maybe because of the demands of discipleship. Maybe because it's just not the popular thing. Maybe because of the persecution. But is it always going to be the few? I think the Bible teaches otherwise. It may not always. This is something that is starting here and now. Few are finding it. But one day we're looking forward to that great revival, right? And I've alluded to Daniel chapter 2 a couple times in our study of Matthew because I think it's so important, because Yeshua is proclaiming the kingdom of God, the kingdom of God. And here we have back in Daniel chapter 2 the prophecy of what the kingdom of God's going to be. So we get an overall picture of its growth. So I'd like to read Daniel chapter 2. Verses 31 through 35, and this is Daniel relating to the king his vision. You, O king, saw and behold a great image, this image which was mighty and whose brightness was excellent stood before you, and its appearance was terrifying. As for this image, its head was of fine gold, its breast and its arms of silver, its belly and its thighs of brass, its legs of iron, its feet part of iron and part of clay. You saw until a stone was cut out without hands, which struck the image on its feet that were of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. Then the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold were broken in pieces together and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors. The wind carried them away, so that no place was found for them. The stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. And then later on, we find out, here he's explaining to the king his dream, and later on he'll give the interpretation. But we know the statue represents the different kingdoms. Okay, the head of gold represents the king, and then the next kingdom. But before the mountain, or before the stone, it becomes like chaff, right? And so that stone represents the kingdom of God. It represents the messianic kingdom that Messiah started. And even though it starts out as just a stone, now notice it's a stone not cut out by hands. It's a work of the Lord. Mm-hmm. All these other kingdoms are a statue. That's something a man makes, right? But the mountain and the stone not cut out by human hands, this is a work of the Lord that Messiah is starting. And it starts as a stone, but it becomes a mountain that fills the whole earth. And so here too, yes, few are those who find it. Okay, speaking to them, few are those who find it. But I think according to the prophecy of Daniel, as well as some of Yeshua's own words that we'll get into, it's not always going to be the few, right? There will be that day of that great world revival. Matthew 13, 31 to 33. He set another parable before them, saying, "The kingdom of heaven is like a grain of mustard seed, which a man took and sowed in his field, which indeed is smaller than all seeds, but when it is grown, it is greater than the herbs and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and lodge in its branches." He spoke another parable to them. "The kingdom of heaven is like yeast, which a woman took and hid in 3 measures of meal until it was all leavened." And I think that we can take these parables on a personal level, you know, that small faith is going to grow up in us, right? If we allow it to, it'll grow up and it'll provide comfort and rest to many. We'll be able to minister because we have the kingdom of God within us. But I think we can also take it on a, community level. You know, yes, the kingdom of God is small right now. We've got Yeshua and his few followers. But just like the stone in Daniel grows and fills the earth, so is this little seed going to grow and become a huge, not a huge tree for mustard seed, but so to speak, a tree that will provide comfort and healing and spread itself out. Okay, so just to wrap up these verses, enter in by the narrow gate. There's only right and there's only wrong. Right, just like we see in the Psalms, just like we see in Deuteronomy, there's this way or there's that way. There's life and there's death. To choose life, you have to choose the narrow gate. He's setting that ultimatum before them. Choose the narrow gate despite the restrictiveness of the intense discipleship I'm calling you to. Despite the persecution, choose the narrow gate. Find life, find freedom from sin. And you will find yourself being a part of the growing kingdom instead of the kingdoms that are going to become like chaff. Any further insights or questions on those two verses?